amity and unity are the very being and beauty of the world. This universe is made up of innumerable different kinds and natures, and all these climb and walk together by the bond of peace and concord among themselves, and with that one high understanding that directs all, and supreme will of God that moves all. It is that link of union with God that gives and preserves being and beauty in all the creatures, as the dependence of the ray upon the sun, or the stream upon the fountain, makes them what they are, which being interrupted they cease to be what they were. All things continue, as thou hast ordained them for all or thy servants. Psalm 119:9. You see, then, this amity and union of subordination of the creatures to God is not dissolved to this day, but woeful and wretched man alone hath withdrawn from this subordination, and dissolved this sacred tie of happy friendship, which at first he was lifted up unto, and privileged with. Amity and friendship, you know, consists in an union of hearts and wills, and a communion of all good things. It makes to one, as much as two can be, by the conspiracy of their affections in one thing, and the joint concurrence of their endeavors to communicate to one another what each hath. It takes away propriety, and it makes a community between persons. Now, how happy was that amity! How blessed that friendship between God and man! Though man's goodness could not extend to God, yet his soul united to God by love and delight, and all that God had given him returning that to the proper owner, acknowledging his absolute dependence on him, and claiming interest and propriety in nothing, not in himself. And then, on the other hand, the love and goodwill of the infinite God placed on man, and from that fountain all the streams of happiness issuing forth towards man, the fullness of God opening up itself to him, and laying out itself towards him, God so far descending, as in a manner, to become the creature's, to expose and dispose himself, and all in him, for poor man's use and comfort. How joyful was that amity! But the breaking of this bond of peace is as sad and grievous. There was a woeful interposal between God and us, which hath separated these chief friends ever, since the beginning, and that is sin, the seeds of all enmity and discord. This hath rent asunder the bond of amity, this hath made such a total aversion of the soul from God, and imprinted such an irreconcilable enmity in the heart against the holy will of God, that there is no possibility to reunite them again, and restore the old friendship, as long as the soul is not quite changed and transformed. That first creation is so marred and defaced, that there is no mending of it till a second creation come. The carnal mind is not simply an enemy, but enmity itself. An enemy may reconcile again, and accept terms of peace, but enmity cannot reconcile to amity, without the very destruction of itself. The opposition of the heart is so perfect, that, as soon may enmity unite with amity, and become one with it, as a carnal natural mind can submit to God's holy will. That which was at the beginning voluntary is become necessary, and turned into the nature of an inbred antipathy, that no art can cure. The fall was such a disjoining of the soul from God, that no skill but infinite wisdom, no strength but almighty power, can set it right, and put it in the first posture again. It is true, there are not many who will openly and expressly denounce war against heaven. It is not so incident, that any man should have explicit plain thoughts of hatred against God. There are some common principles engraved by God in all men's minds, which serve, as his witnesses against men, that God should be loved, served, adored, and worshipped, that there is nothing so worthy of the desires of the soul. Now, this general acknowledgement deludes the most part, for they take it for granted that they do love God with their heart, because their consciences bear witness that they ought to love him, as if it were all one to know our duty and to do it. Who is there but he entertains himself with this good opinion of himself, that his heart is good and true to God. For, say you, whom should I love, if I love not God? I were not worthy to live, if I love not him.
It is true indeed that you say, but if you did know your hearts you would find their faces turned backward and averted from God, and could no more please yourselves in such a confession of the truth, than the devil hath reason to think himself a believer, because he is convinced that Christ is the Son of God, and confessed it too, no more than the son that promised to go to the garden to work, and went not, had ground to think himself an obedient son, Matthew 21:30. Such a confession of duty may be extorted from damned spirits, and therefore you would not draw this veil over the wretched wickedness of your natures, to the end that you may conceive well of yourselves. It is so far from extenuating or excusing, that the very conviction of the great obligation to love and obey God, is the greatest aggravation of the enmity. It is this which makes it the purest malice and perfectest hatred, that knowing the goodness of God, convinced of our bound duty to love and serve him, yet in the very light of such a shining truth, to turn our hearts away from him, and exercise all acts of hostility against him. That you may know, then, wherein the enmity of your hearts consists, I shall instance it in three branches or evidences. There is an enmity in the understanding, that it cannot stoop to believing of the truth. There is an enmity in the will, that it cannot subject to the obedience of God's holy commands, and this is extended also to a stubborn rebellion against the will of God, manifested in the dispensations of his providence. In a word, the natural and carnal mind is incapable of faith, of obedience, and of submission. There are many things revealed in the scripture that the natural man cannot receive or know, for they are foolishness to him, 1 Corinthians 2:14. Some spirits there are lifted up above others, either by nature or education, in which this rebellion doth more evidently appear. Reason in them contends with religion, and they will believe no more than they can give a reason for. There is a wisdom in some men, that despiseth the simplicity, or the inevidence of the gospel, and accounts it foolishness. The carnal mind will needs start out from implicit trusting of God, when once it is possessed with some imagination of wisdom. Therefore how many are the insurrections of men's spirits against God's absolute power over the creatures, against the mysteries of the Holy Trinity and Incarnation, against the resurrection of our bodies? In these, and such like, the pretended wisdom of men hath taken liberty to act enmity, and to dispute against God. But truly, the rebellion and insubjection against the truth of God is more generally practiced, even by the multitude of men, though in an unfree, hidden way, how few do believe their own desperate wickedness, though God hath testified it of man. Doth not everyone apprehend some good to remain in his nature, and some power to good? What an impossibility is it to persuade you that all mankind are under the sentence of eternal condemnation, that children, who have not done good or evil, are involved in it also. Your hearts rise against such doctrines, as if they were bloody and cruel inventions. To tell you that many are called and few chosen, that the most part of them who profess the truth are walking in the way to hell, and shall undoubtedly fall into it, you may hear such things but you bless yourselves from them, and cannot be persuaded to admit them into your minds. The hearts of men will be giving the very light to the God of truth, when he speaks these things in his word, God forbid that all that be true. If we should expound the law unto you, and show you that the least idle word, the lightest thoughts, the smallest inward motion of the heart deserves eternal misery, that anger is murder in God's sight, that lusting is fornication, that covetousness and love of the world is idolatry, these things you cannot know or receive. There are so many high imaginations in your minds, that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God, so many thoughts that are mustered and set in battle array against the holy truths of God, that truly no weapons of human persuasion or instruction can be able to cast down your misapprehensions and imaginations, or reassumings of your hearts, or able to scatter these armies of rebellious thoughts, and bring them in captivity. 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. Man's darkened mind is a stronghold, that all the repeated and continued beatings of the word, the multiplying precept upon precept and line upon line, cannot storm it to make any true light shine into it. It is a dungeon, a pit so shut up and enclosed, no door nor window in it, so that, albeit the sun of righteousness shine upon it, and round about it, there is no beam of that light can enter in the hearts of many thousands. The generality are drowned as yet in a deluge of ignorance, under the very light of daily preaching. It is a night of as thick darkness within men's souls, as if there were no light about us. Certainly this declares the height of enmity, the strength of the opposition. This prison of your minds is a stronghold indeed, that is proof of all preaching or instruction, and certainly they will hold out, till Almighty Power storm them, and beat or batter open some entry in your souls to receive this shining light of the gospel. Then, there is a rebellion of the will against God's holy will revealed in His law or word. It cannot be subject to the law of God. It neither is nor can, for enmity and antipathy is sunk into its nature so, that it is the most deformed monstrous thing in the world. If the disfigured face of man's soul were visible, oh how ugly were it! How would you loathe it? If there were a creature that could do nothing but hate itself and sought its own destruction, that were a hateful enough object. But self-hatred and enmity is nothing so deformed and abominable, as, for the creature's will to be set in opposition to the holy will of Him that made it. It needs not much demonstration this, if you had but a little more consideration. Look back upon the tenor of your ways, set them beside the will and commands of God, and what find you? Whether agreement or disagreement. Take a view of the current of your inclinations and affections, and compare that with the holy will of God, and what find you? Friendship or enmity? You cannot digest the reproach of that, to be called enemies to God, but I pray you consider, if there be not as perfect contrariety in your desires, affections, inclinations, and actions to the will of God, as if you did profess it. What would you do, if you professed yourselves enemies to God? Could you possibly vent your enmity any other way than this, in withdrawing from the yoke of His obedience, in revolting from that allegiance you owe to Him? You could wrong Him no further than by setting your hearts and ways contrary to His heart and ways in loving what He hates and hating what He loves. For His own blessed being you could not impair it. Now, consider, if that be not acted as really as if you did profess it. Can you say that cursing, swearing, lying, railing, anger, strife, envy, revenge, and such like works of darkness, are the things which His soul loves? Are these suitable to His holy will? And yet these are your inveterate customs, to which your natures are so inured and habituated, that you can no more forsake them than hate yourselves. Our filthiness, drunkenness, Sabbath-breaking, covetousness and love of the world, are these His delight? And yet these are your delight. Again is it not His will, that ye should purge yourselves from all filthiness of flesh and spirit, and perfect holiness? Is not righteousness that which He loves, and truth in the inward parts? Doth not He look to a contrite heart, and account that a savory sacrifice? Is it not His royal statute and commandment, of which not one jot shall fail, that ye should deny yourselves, love your enemies, forgive them that offend you, sanctify His name always in your hearts, and especially on the holy Sabbath, that ye should watch unto prayer, Be sober in the use of the world, be much in watching for his second coming.
Now, what repugnance is in your hearts and ways to all these?
Do not the conversations of men display a banner against the gospel, and proclaim, as much in reality, as is said in words in Psalm 2, let us cast his cords behind us, and cut his bands. These things are unsavory unto you, you smell nothing pleasant in them, but only in the puddle of the world, in running at random, at your own liberty, after your own imaginations, that you account only liberty.
Go and shall your hearts be subdued, and your affections brought in captivity to the obedience of Christ.
When shall you be delivered up to the truth, and so made to obey from the heart that form of doctrine and sound words, Romans 6:17. This is the strongest hold that Satan hath in man's heart, his will and affections, and this keeps out longest against Jesus Christ, till he that is stronger come and bind the strong man, and cast out the enmity, and make all captive to his loving obedience and willing subjection, 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. Then, thirdly, the enmity of the soul of man is acted in his rebellion against the will of God manifested in his works, in his unsubjection and unsubmissive disposition towards the good pleasure of the Lord, in carving out such and such a lot in the world. It is certain that, as the will of God is the supreme rule of righteousness, so it is the sovereign cause and fountain of all things, and therefore, how infinitely is the creature bound to be subject to him as a lawgiver, by pleasant and willing obedience to his righteous and reasonable commands, and to submit to him as the absolute ruler, by quiet and humble condescendence, to all the dispensations of his providence. Now, you know, if you know anything of yourselves, how cross and opposite these hearts of yours are to his good pleasure, how they are set just contrary. And whence flow all murmurings, grudgings, discontents, griefs, cares, and perplexities of men, but from this fountain, the rebellion of the heart against God? There is nothing in all the creation mutinous and malcontent, but the heart of man. You see frequent examples of it in the murmurations of the people in the wilderness. It is frequently styled a tempting of the Lord, Exodus 17:2, importing a high provocation of his holy majesty, a special incitement, as it were, and motive to declare his absolute power and righteousness against such, and therefore these are often conjoined, Psalm 78:17 and 18, they sinned yet more, by provoking the Most High, and they tempted God in their hearts, and it is added, verse 19, yea, they spake against God.
Wherein you may observe a gradation of aggravations of this enmity. When men have already deserved infinite punishment at his hand, and may always look within, and find an answer to all the murmurings of their hearts, as having sinned so often against him, yet then, to rise up against his good pleasure, and after we have so often sinned, to repine at anything coming from him.
And this, certainly, is a high provocation of the Most High God. It puts a kind of necessity upon him, to inflict that which thou indeed deservest. And then, this inward heart burning against God, it breaks out often in words, against that Most High and Holy One. So verse 40 and 41, and verse 56 and 57 provoking, which is the plain expression of murmuring, in the margin is rendered, rebelling against him. And so in verse 8, when a short account is given of them, when the character or anagram of such a people is expressed, it is set down thus, a stubborn and rebellious generation. Therefore Paul, considering this woeful and wretched posture of the soul, set in opposition to the always blessed will of God, and the madness and folly of it, he exhorts us, neither murmur ye, as some of them murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer, for these things happened for ensamples, and see, 1 Corinthians 10:1 and 11. Truly, there is nothing more deformed and vile in itself, or more disquieting and tormenting to the soul, or more dangerous in the consequences of it, than such a posture of spirit, a discontented humor against God's providence, whether it be in withholding that good thing from us which we desire, or sending that which crosseth our humor, whether sickness, or want, or reproach, or disrespect, whatsoever it be that the heart is naturally carried to pursue or eschew.
What more abominable and ugly visage than the countenance of an angry and furious person? But when this is against God, it adds infinitely to the deformity and vileness of it. "I do well to be angry," is the motto of a discontented soul. It elects an imaginary sovereignty against true sovereignty, it sets up an anti-providence, it establisheth another divine power and wisdom, and brings the majesty, highness, and holiness of God down to be tread upon by the creature. And then it is its own tormentor, a sin that needs no punishment but itself the insurrection and mutiny of the heart against God's will, sets all the powers of the soul out of course, vexes pains, and disquiets all. There is no peace and tranquility but in the complacency of the heart with God's heart, as Ephraim was like a bullock unaccustomed with the yoke, Jeremiah 31:18. The more he fretted and spurned at his yoke, the more it galled him, and grieved him, till he was instructed, and then he was eased. This fills the soul with hideous tormenting thoughts, and cares, this feeds upon its own marrow, and consumes it, as some have made the emblem of envy, which is a particular kind of this enmity, as if you would imagine a creature that did waste and consume all its moisture, and marrow, and feed upon the destruction of itself. Now this is but the prelude of what follows. This self-punishment is a messenger to tell what is coming, that the Most High God is engaged in his power against such a person, and shall vent his displeasure to their eternal displeasure. That is the fruit of this enmity. Sermon 21. Verses 7 and 8. The carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please God. It is not the least of man's evils, that he knows not how evil he is, therefore the searcher of the heart of man gives the most perfect account of it, Jeremiah 17:12. The heart is deceitful above all things, as well as desperately wicked, to things superlative and excessive in it, bordering upon an infiniteness, such as sin is capable of, wickedness and deceitfulness. And indeed, that which makes the wicked heart desperately and hopelessly so, is the deceitfulness of it. There are many specious coverings gotten to palliate this wickedness and enmity, and so many invisible and spiritual wickednesses in the heart, that it is no wonder that they lurk and dwell without observation. Sin is either covered with some deceivable pretext of another thing, or altogether escapes the dim eyes of men, because of its subtile and spiritual nature. Both are in this business the enmity of man's heart against God is so subtile a thing in many, and it is shrouded over with some other pretenses in all, that few get the lively discovery and sense of it. It is true, it is very gross and palpable in the most part of men, visible, I mean, upon them, though not to themselves. Any, whose eyes are opened, may behold the black visage of rebellion in the most part of the actings and courses of men, as the Apostle, Galatians 5 speaks, the works of the flesh are manifest. Truly this enmity against God is too manifest in most part, the weapons of your warfare against God being so carnal and visible, your opposition to his holy will and ways being so palpable. There is an enmity acted by many in the tenor of their conversation, without God in the world, and against God, as appears in all your inveterate and godless customs of lying, swearing, cursing, drunkenness, railing, Sabbath breaking, neglect of prayer, and such like, which carry in their forebrow this inscription, against the known God, opposite to that of the Athenian's altar.
the God whom you pretend to know and worship. His name is every day blasphemed, his word slighted, his will disobeyed, as if you had proclaimed war against him. But there is in some, and I fear a great many, not only unacted but unaffected enmity too, enmity rising up to the maturity and ripeness of malignity and hatred of the image of God in all his children. Some are not willing to go to heaven, yet they do not disturb others in their journey. They can let others be religious about them, and really desire to be like them, but others there are, who will neither enter into heaven themselves, nor let others enter, as Christ speaks of the Pharisees, Matthew 23:13. They hate the light of another's conversation, because their own deeds are evil, and are reproved and condemned by it. It is said, Revelation 11:10, the witnesses tormented them that dwelled on the earth. It is strange what a torment it is to the world that the godly are in it. Piety is an eyesore to many. If they could extirpate all that bears that image, they would think it sweet, as bread. Psalm 14. This is a more open and declared enmity against the God of heaven, and yet I know it lurks under the mask of some other thing. You pretend to hate hypocrisy only, alas! What a scorn is it for profanity to hate hypocrisy! Sure it is not, because it is a sin, but for the very shadow of piety it carries. You hate the thing itself so perfectly, that you cannot endure the very picture of it. Do not deceive yourselves, the true quarrel is, because they run not to the same excessive right with you.
If they will lie, cozen, defraud, swear, and blaspheme as other men, you could endure to make them companions, as you do others, and the principle of that is, the enmity that was placed in the beginning, that mortal irreconcilable feud, betwixt the two families, are two seeds of Christ and Satan. But as I told you, this enmity acts in a more subtile and invisible way in some, and it is painted over with some fair colors to hide the deformity of it. Not only the grosser corruptions of men carry this stamp, but take even the most refined piece or part in man, take his mind, take the excellency of his mind, even the wisdom of it, yet that hath enmity incorporated into it, and mixed with it throughout all, for the wisdom of the flesh is enmity with God, as it may be read, the very prudence and reason of a natural man, which carries him to a distance from, and opposition with, the common defilements in the courses of men, yet that hath in its bosom a more exquisite and refined enmity against God, and so the more spiritual and purified it be from grosser corruptions, it is the more active and powerful against God, because it is, as it were, the very spirit and quintessence of enmity. You see it, 1 Cor. How the wisdom of God is foolishness to the wisdom of the world, and then again, that the wisdom of the world is the greatest folly to the only wise God. Men, that have many natural advantages beyond others, are at this great disadvantage, they are more ready to despise godliness, as too base and simple a thing to adorn their natures, as Christ said of rich men, it may be said of wise men, of learned men, of civil and blameless persons who have a smooth carriage before the world, how hard is it for such to enter into the kingdom of heaven? Hard indeed! For they must be stripped naked of that, ere they can enter through this narrow gate, I mean, the opinion and conceit, of any worth or excellency, and so diminished in their own eyes, that they may go through this needle-si without crushing. The stream of enmity runs underground often, and so hides itself under some other notion, till at length it burst forth openly. I find it commonly runs in the secret channel of enmity or friendship to some other thing opposite to God. So James 4:4, the enmity of the world is enmity with God, and 1 John 2:15, he that loveth the world, the love of the Father is not in him. There are two dark and underground conduits to convey this enmity against God, enmity to the world, and enmity to ourselves, self-love, and creature love.
We cannot denounce war openly against heaven, but this is the next course, to join to, or associate with, any party that is contrary to God, and thus, under the covert of friendship to ourselves, and love to the world, we war against God, and destroy our own souls. I say, first, enmity to the world carries enmity to God in the bosom of it, and if you believe not this, hear the apostle's sharp and pungent question, you adulterers and adulteresses, know you not that the enmity of the world is enmity with God? He doth not speak only to persons guilty of that crime, but to all natural men, who are guilty of adultery or whoredom of a more spiritual nature, but as abominable and more dangerous.
There is a bond and special tie betwixt all men and God their Maker, which obligeth them to consecrate and devote themselves, their affections and endeavors, to His honor, especially when the covenant of the gospel is subverted unto that, in which Jesus Christ our Lord reveals Himself, as having only right to us and our affections, as willing to bestow Himself upon us, and notwithstanding of all the distance between Him and wretched sinners, yet filling it up with His infinite love and wonderful condescendency, demeaning Himself to the form of a servant, out of love, that so He might take us up to be His chaste spouse, and adorn us with His beauty. This He challengeth of us, whoever hear and profess the gospel, this is your profession, if ye understand it that Jesus Christ shall be your well-beloved, and ye His, that ye shall separate yourself to Him, and admit no stranger in His place, that the choice and marrow of your joy, love and delight, shall be bestowed on Him. Now, this bond and tie of a professed relation to that glorious husband, is foully broken by the most part, by espousing their affections to this base world. Your hearts are carried off Him unto strangers, that is, present perishing things, whereas the intendment of the gospel is, to present you to Christ as pure virgins, 2 Corinthians 11:2. Truly your hearts are gone a-whoring after other things, the love of the world hath withdrawn you, or kept you in chains, these present things are as snares, nets, and bands, as an harlot's hands and heart, Ecclesiastes 7:26. They are powerful enchantments over you, which bewitch you to a base love, from an honorable and glorious love. Oh, that you would consider it, my beloved, what opposition here is betwixt the love of the world and the love of the Father, betwixt enmity to that which hath nothing in it, but some present bait to your deceitful lusts, and enmity to God, your only lawful husband. Affection is a transforming and conforming thing, see terum amis teres, the love of God will purify thy heart, and lift it up to more similitude to Him whom thou lovest, but the love of the world assimilates it unto the world, makes it such a base and ignoble piece, as the earth is. Do you think marriage affection can be parted? My well-beloved is mine, therefore the church is the turtle, the dove to Christ, of wonderful chastity, it never joins but to one, and after the death of its marrow, it sighs and mourns ever after, and sits solitarily. You must retire, my beloved, and disengage from the love of other things, or you cannot love Christ, and if you love not Christ, you cannot have peace with the Father, and if you have not that peace, you cannot have life. This is the chain of life. The first link begins at the divorcement of all former loves and beloved idols. Once the soul must be loosed in desire and delight, and that link must be fastened upon the most lovely and desirable object Christ, the desire of the nations, and this draws along another link of peace and life with it. Do not mistake it, religion would not hinder or prejudice your lawful business in this world. Oh, it were the most compendious way to advance it with more ease to your souls. But certainly it will teach you to exchange the love of these things for a better and more heart-contenting love. Then enmity to ourselves is enmity to God, and truly this is the last stronghold that holds out longest against God, when others may be beaten down or surrendered.
Possibly a man may attain to this, to despise these lower things, as below his natural dignity and the excellency of his spirit. Some may renounce much of that friendship with worldly and temporal things, as being sordid and base, but the enmity gets into this strong and invisible tower of darkness, self-love and pride, and therefore the Apostle John makes this the last and chiefest, the pride of life, 1 John 2:16. When the lusts of the eyes and flesh are in some measure abated, this is but growing, and what decreaseth of these, seems to accrest unto this, as if self-love and pride did feed and nourish itself upon the ashes or consumption of other vices. Yea, it draws sap from graces and virtues, and grows thereby, till at length it kill that which nourished it, and indeed the Apostle James seems to proceed to this, version 5, 6, when he minds us that God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Doth the scripture say this in vain, saith he? Is not self-enmity as well enmity as the enmity of the world? And therefore God opposes himself unto it, as the very grand enmity. Self is the great lord, the arch-rebel, the head of all opposition, that in which they do all center, and when all the inferior soldiers are captives, or killed, this is last in the field. It lives first in opposition and dies last, primum vivens et ultimum morens. When a man is separated from many things, yet he may be but more conjoined to himself, and so the further disjoined from God. Of all these vile rags of the old man, this is nearest the skin, and last put off. Of all the members, self is the heart, first alive, and last alive.
When enmity is constrained to render up the outward members of the body, to yield them to a more smooth and fair carriage to a civil behavior, when the mind itself is forced to yield unto some light of truth and knowledge of the gospel, yet the enmity retires into the heart, and fortifies it the stronger, by self-love and self-estimation, as in winter the encompassing cold makes the heat to combine itself together in the bowels of the earth, and by this means the springs are hotter than in summer, so the surrounding light of the gospel, or education, or natural honesty, drives the heat and strength of enmity inward, where it fortifies itself more. This is that accursed anaperistasis that is made by the concurrence of some advantages of knowledge and civility, and such like. The blood of enmity against God gets in about the heart, when it is chased for fear out of the outward man. Therefore, the very first and fundamental principle of Christianity is, let a man deny himself, and so he shall be my disciple.
He must become a fool in his own eyes, though he be wise, that he may be wise. 1 Corinthians 3:18. He must become as ungodly, though godly, that he may be justified by faith. Romans 4:5. He must forsake himself, that he may indeed find himself, or get a better self in another. He must not eat much honey, that is not good, it would swell him, though it be pleasant. He must not search his own glory, or reflect much upon it, if he would be a follower and a friend of Christ.
Look, how much soever you engage to yourselves esteem, or desire to be esteemed of others, to reflect with complacency on yourselves, to mind your own satisfaction and estimation in what you do, so much you disengage from Jesus Christ, for these are contrary points. This is a direct motion towards Christ. That is an inverse and backward motion towards ourselves, and so much, as we move that way, we promote not, but lose our way, and are further from the true end. Ezekiel's living creatures may be an emblem of a Christian's motion. He returns not, as he goes, he makes a straight line to God, whithersoever he turn him, but nature makes all crooked lines. They seem to go forth in obedience to God, but they have a secret and seen reflection into its own bosom. And this is the greatest act of enmity, to idolize God, and deify ourselves. We make him a cipher and sacrifice to ourselves his peculiar, incommunicable property of Alpha and Omega, that we do sacrilegiously attribute to ourselves, the beginning of our notions, and end of them too. This is the crooked line that nature cannot possibly move out of, till a higher spirit come and restore her that halted, and make plain her paths. That which is added, as a reason, explains this enmity more clearly, because it cannot be subject, and see. Truly these two forementioned amities of the world and of ourselves, do withdraw men wholly from the orderly subjection that they owe to the law of God. Order is the beauty of everything, of nature, of art, of the whole universe, and of the several parts, kingdoms and republics of it. This indeed is the very beauty of the world, all things subordinate to him that made them. Only miserable man hath broken this order, and marred this beauty, and he cannot be subject, cannot come again into that orderly station and subordination he was once into. This is the only gap or breach of the creation. And it is some other engagements that draw him thus far out of course: the base love of the world, and the inordinate love of himself. Oh, these make his neck stiff, that it cannot bow to the yoke of obedience. These have opposite and contrary commands, and no man can serve two masters. When the commands of the great Lord, self, come in opposition with the commands of God, then he cannot be subject to the law of God. For a time, in some things he may resemble a subjection, when the will of self and the will of God commands in one point, as sometimes they do by accident, but that is neither frequent nor constant. Not only is he not subject, but there is worse in it, he cannot be subject to the law of God. This is certainly to throw down the natural pride of man, that always apprehends some eminent ability in himself. You think still to make yourselves better, and when convinced or challenged for sins, to make amends and reform your lives.
You used to promise these things, as lightly and easily, as if they were wholly in your power, and as if you did only delay them for advantage. And truly it seems this principle of self-sufficiency is engraved on men's hearts, when they procrastinate and delay repentance and earnest minding of religion to some other fitter season, as if it were in their liberty to apply to it, when they please. And when you are urged and persuaded to some reformation, you take in hand, even as that people, Jeremiah 42:6-20, who said, "All that the Lord hath said we will do." You can strike hands, and engage to serve the Lord, as easily as that people in Joshua 24:18-19. But we may say, "Oh, that there were such a heart in you." But, alas, such a heart is not in you. You cannot serve the Lord, for he is holy and jealous, and ye are not only weak, but wicked. I beseech you then, believe this one testimony that God hath given of man, even the choicest thing in man, the very wisdom of a natural man: it is not subject to God's law, and it cannot be better, neither can it be subject. Resolution, industry, vows, and covenants will not effect this, till the Most High break and bow the heart. And not only has this enmity against the old law of commandments an antipathy at them, as crossing our lust, but even against the new and living law of the Spirit of life in Christ. Here is your misery: you can neither be subject to the law as commanding to obey it, or threatening for disobedience to it, nor to the gospel as promising to believe and receive it. The law commands, but your law countermands within. The law threatens and sentences you with condemnation, but you have some self-pleasing delusion and dream in your heads, and bless yourselves in your own hearts, even though ye walk in the imagination of your hearts, contrary to the law. Deuteronomy 29. It is strange that you do not fore-apprehend and fear hell. But it is this delusion possesses the heart: you shall not die. It was the first act of enmity, not only the transgression of the command, but in belief of the truth of the curse, and that which first encouraged man to sin, encourages you all to lie into it, and continue in it, a fancy of escaping wrath. This noise fills the heart. Satan whispers in the ear, "Go on, you shall not die." Thus it appears that the natural mind cannot be subject to the law of God. No persuasion, no instruction, can enforce this belief of your damnable condition upon you.